Welcome back to The Monitor, coming to you from the studios of KPFT in Houston. My name is Mark Babawi. My co-host is Otis McClay, and joining us now live is one of the two guests. We're having trouble with the other one, but Roy Idelson is joining us. He's a clinical psychologist and the president of Idelson Consulting, where he studies, writes about, and consults on the role of psychological issues in political, organizational, and group conflict settings. He's also the past president of Psychologists for Social Responsibility and associate director of the Solomon Asch Center for Study of Ethnopological Conflict at the Bryn Mawr College. He's also a member of the Coalition for an Ethical Psychology. Roy, hopefully I said your last name right.
You said it perfectly, which puts you in a rare group.
Okay, well, that's a good start. We're trying to get Trudy Bond on the line. We're having some issues with her phone. We've spoken to her on her cell phone. We're trying to get through on a landline. She should be joining us soon, and when she does, she is a consulting psychologist at Independent Practice in Ohio. She's a member of the Coalition for an Ethical Psychology as well. And you and Trudy, Roy, co-authored this piece called The Complicity of Psychologists in CIA Torture. CIA torture, the war on terror, and Guantanamo have been big topics on this show for many, many years. We've been on the air since 2003, so I've lost count of how many times those topics have come up. But we haven't had an awful lot of people involved in clinical psychology discuss the torture program, and obviously this executive summary of a still classified report was released last week, and we've had some time to look at it, and I've been following broadly what's in there, but not from a psychologist perspective. So tell me what you, and we'll get Trudy on here in just a minute to share her views as well, what you made of what you saw in the executive summary, the declassified portion of it, the role of these two psychologists in the report called Grayson Swigert and Hammond Dunbar, although that's not their real names, and you named them in your article. So who were they? What were they up to? And as a psychologist yourself, what do you make of what was going on? That's a huge question to start with.
Great questions. What we know from the Senate report, much we already knew, but there are some additional details. Every new detail makes it a more disturbing picture, I think. And for psychologists such as myself, it's even more troubling because we were, there's no getting around it, I mean, members of my profession were absolutely central to the enhanced interrogation program or torture program of the CIA, and in fact, the Department of Defense as well. The report is focused on the CIA, but the techniques used by the Pentagon were very, very similar. And what we found is that two psychologists in particular, and their real names are Jim Mitchell and Bruce Jessen, developed these torture techniques. They brought them to the CIA shortly after the attacks of 9/11. They based them as an effort to, as they described it, re-engineer the SEER program. There was a program that SEER stands for Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape. And this is a program that some of our top soldiers would go through here in the United States in order to prepare them should they get captured overseas by a country that does not observe the Geneva Conventions.
You mean like America, for example?
Well, yeah.
Like Demi Moore.
You won't find that in any of the, you know, the SEER guides.
Right.
But exactly, I mean, that's part of the tragic irony of all this, is these soldiers were, you know, trained to try and resist torture, and rather than making torture something that we should fear might happen elsewhere, Mitchell and Jessen helped the CIA bring it home. And we abused and tortured dozens of detainees at CIA black sites in various countries, at Guantanamo, at Bagram in Afghanistan, and the techniques included waterboarding, confinement in a coffin-sized box, threatened harm to family members, freezing temperatures, sleep deprivation, just awful stuff. And the idea, not just the ideas, the implementation as well came from psychologists.
Well, we've been able to get Trudy Bond on the line, so I just want to welcome her to the show as well, because we had a little bit of trouble initially getting hold of her. Trudy is a counseling psychologist, as I said. She's in independent practice in Toledo. She's a member of the Coalition for an Ethical Psychology and on the steering committee of Psychologists for Social Responsibility. Trudy, welcome.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you on. I know Otis and I are both brimming with questions, yeah. and we're going to run out of time before we get to all the questions, but I'll let Otis jump in here.
Yeah, I'm actually less interested in the psychology of these two guys from Spokane than I am about the people who implemented this ultimately, since basically we know torture doesn't work. I mean, you know, it's used as a way of dominating and controlling. I'm curious about the psychology of people who implemented it and decided to go ahead with using this. And that's especially true since the FBI got all of the information from, which one was it?
Curveball?
Yeah.
The guy who was basically taken to Egypt, tortured, and given...
Well, hey, the FBI got all the information from him using standard techniques first.
Right.
And then the CIA took over and waterboarded him 127 times or something.
Oh, you
I'm
mean,
sorry.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Trudy, do you want to take a crack at that one first, and then Roy?
Sure. And Roy and I have discussed this, as I'm sure many other people have, too. Torture doesn't work, of course. And I was... in Geneva at the committee, at the meetings of the Convention Against Torture, and was surprised when a representative from the U.S. Department of State quoted George Orwell in that torture is for torture. The purpose of torture is simply to torture another person.
Oh, wait, a member of the U.S. Department of State said was quoting George Orwell?
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
That's quite spectacular.
We were all shocked, I think.
Okay. Quoting him to say that he agrees that torture is for torture.
But he had never read George Orwell, so he didn't know what he was saying.
Okay. So then what do you make of the people who implemented it, if the State Department is saying that we know torture doesn't work?
James Mitchell has talked a little bit since the Senate report came out, and he said he was very upset, appalled, abhorred by what happened on 9/11, as many of us were. He was in the military his entire life. He had just retired from the military in May of 2001. And torture often is for revenge.
Yeah.
It's for violence. It's for intimidation. Don't do this to us again. So, and the CIA report, I think, demonstrates that many of the people who were involved in the torturing and abuse of the detainees were extremely angry and rather vicious. If you're doing rectal hydration, that's a very...
Well, you know, this motivation of revenge... This
who are these people?
The motivation of revenge, I think, is...
That's not their job.
It's pretty institutionalized in the military. I forget the name of the documentary now, but it showed, you know, pre-battle kind of pep talk within the U.S. military as the invasion of Iraq was taking place in 2003. And they had the troops sitting, you know, under a tent right before they go into the battlefield. And to talk to them, they showed them video of 9/11. Which,
right.
I mean, how you could even show 9/11 in Iraq is a whole different propaganda war that we've discussed on the show many, many times. But the idea that you could somehow get in any way accurate information out of people when that isn't really what you're trying to do in any case is a huge question. And Roy, I want to come back to you because in the article you guys mention a book that I've been trying to read slowly here, James Reason, Pay Any Price, Greed, Power, and Endless War. But the good news is he's now, I think, not officially being pursued by the administration
right.
anymore. So that's a little bit of good news. We don't often get to share that. But I'm going to read a small bit of the book here for people just to you know, understand these two guys slightly better. And if you have a copy of the book, this is page 177 for anyone who's interested. But James Reason says, after 9/11, James Mitchell and Bruce Jessen, psychologists who had been trained in the Air Force's version of SEER, which Roy mentioned earlier, this is the evasion resistance training, worked out outside contractors to the CIA to help the agency turn the simulated torture tactics into offensive weapons, enhance interrogation techniques for the use of obtaining intelligence from detainees held by the CIA. And skipping further down, this program basically was designed to have people give propaganda. Right. So, and Reason says Mitchell and Jessen were advocating torture tactics that had been originally designed to break men and force them to spout lies and propaganda, but they claimed that these techniques were not torture and that they would elicit truth, not lies and propaganda. In the upside-down world of the global war on terror, their explanations were widely accepted. So as psychologists, and I want you both to talk about this, within your profession, and that we've seen, and you can talk about the response from the American Psychologist Association as well, how is it even possible, if you know anything about psychology, I mean, is it viable to take a program that was designed by the military for a purpose and reverse engineering it and claiming to be able to reverse the original aim? It just doesn't add up to me. It seemed like someone wanted to buy it, not that it actually worked.
Well, I think you're right. It doesn't add up. There's no reason to think that this would work. The logic is flawed. And the only way torture does work is to obtain false confessions, which is how it has been used in the past. And in fact, we know that in at least one case, the CIA was able to obtain a false confession from a detainee saying that Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda were, you know, in correspondence with each other. And that, arguably, that's part of what the government, our government, wanted at that time, was that confession. Because most of the waterboarding went on between the middle of 2002 right up until early 2003, just the same period in which the buildup to the invasion of Iraq took place. But in terms of getting useful information from waterboarding, there's no reason to think it would work. It doesn't work, and Mitchell and Jessen were very good salesmen, and there was clearly much further up the chain of command. I mean, at the top, there was a desire to use far more aggressive techniques than were originally intended. And for a variety of reasons, including some of the ones that Trudy mentioned. So Mitchell and Jessen were welcomed with what they wanted to do. And whether it worked or not wasn't as important. The other point I'll add here is there was a lot of research going on in these CIA black sites. In fact, the entire, you can make the case, the entire torture program was also an extraordinarily ugly and unethical research program. They had people taking notes of everything that was done. Tons of data was collected, how much water was used, this position versus that position. What happens if you combine torture techniques at the same time versus use them sequentially? So this was a massive research agenda, also obviously without any informed consent or protections of those who were, you know, unwilling participants.
Yeah, the word Mengele comes to mind here. But I'm wondering about the kind of people who could approve it. You know, what kind of people are these that could go ahead and say, let's do this thing that we know won't work, at least, and lie about it? I don't know. Maybe that's not some place we want to go.
No, we can. Drew, do you have any take on that as a psychologist?
I had the news yesterday talking about how this was not torture and then trying to point the finger at John Yoo and others that said the DOJ authorized it, so it was legal.
Right.
Who's now sitting on a court, John Yoo is. He's got a lifetime appointment.
So if you want to get into the psychology of evil, that would be a whole other show. A lot of this isn't even about psychology. Does waterboarding work? If it works, you wouldn't do it 83 times. It would have worked the first time. Obviously, it didn't work.
Or at least within a handful of times.
I mean, you know,
83 times is ridiculous.
Or 183 on KSM. They were doing it to torture, not for any information that they might.
And I'm wondering what kind of sickness this represents, you know, to our society and our culture.
Exactly.
I mean, there are so many side issues about this. I mean, the Geneva Convention, we've now given permission to any hostile person to torture our people. I mean, it's just insane. And
yet I would also say we've known this about we've known much information about Mitchell and James since at least 2007.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, that's actually a question for you, Trudy. I mean, Roy, right at the beginning of the show, right before we were able to get you on, was saying that to some extent it confirmed, and I believe this as well, to some extent it confirmed a lot of things we suspected already. It does change things when you see them written down. But what is it that you feel you learned from the report that maybe you didn't know, or what do you think the outcome should be now? And speaking within your profession, what should happen to these two guys?
Well, there were a few more techniques we learned and more the degree of the horror that went on and the extent of the horror.
Right.
But in 2010, a complaint was filed against James Mitchell in Texas. That's the only state he was licensed in. And many of these same techniques, much of the information was already included in that complaint in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
That was filed with the psychology licensing board in Texas, and they found nothing wrong with it. He was not even disciplined. He wasn't sanctioned.
Well, this is Texas.
Yeah, you have to do you have to do a lot to get a complaint in Texas.
You can do a PDF file there. It's an extensive complaint that's very well documented.
So there's a lot of related questions here that I want to get to with both of you, and we've only got about 7 minutes or so. One question that Todd gave me on a piece of paper, which I've been thinking about as well, is whether these people who were detained, whether they were actually terrorists before, or have we just created additional terrorists, not only the ones that we torture and then release because they were the wrong people, as was the case in many situations we've heard in the report, or people who have heard about it. What is the psychological effect of hearing about this kind of treatment on people who are not involved, or even experiencing this kind of treatment on people who are not involved in the allegations that are made against them?
I'll take it briefly, Roy, and then you can jump in. Abu Zubaydah, they knew within a few weeks that he was not the top operative that they thought that he was. But we still have him at Gitmo. We may never release him. And even though he is not guilty of what we were accusing him of. Another detainee that we have tortured, who will never be tried because the convening authority said we tortured him, Al-Qahtani, is at Guantanamo. He will be there forever. Others have been released. The majority were not terrorists, but many have gone back to their homes, and they are very quiet, saying very little. But in terms of those who have watched what we've done, I think we're seeing the results of that today. With ISIS and difficult, other situations in Yemen and Somalia and other places.
Roy, what's your take?
Well, I agree with Trudy. The effect of the torture program, among the other horrors, was certainly to damage the standing of the United States around the world, and to make many people rally against us, or at the very least, not stand with us. A lot of terrorism, one way of looking at terrorism is that it involves a pyramid, and at the very top, the smallest number, are those who commit acts of terrorism. And the broad base are people who are supportive of those choices. And part of the way you defeat or try to defeat terrorism is by eliminating that base. If the terrorists do not have broad support, all their efforts become that much more difficult. And what we did instead was to build that base, I'm afraid, and make it that much more likely that somewhere or other, many people now have family members, or know someone, have friends who were harmed terribly, killed in the war on terror, some of them tortured. So it's been a disaster in that sense too, including to the security of Americans. But I do want to note that the Senate report focuses on Mitchell and Jessen, but I think it's important to recognize that the problem and the reason for concern are much larger. And as a psychologist, I am deeply worried about my profession as a whole and about the choices the American Psychological Association made. I mean, the APA is the largest association of psychologists in the world.
And they're now conducting an investigation right into these allegations that they colluded with the CIA and the Pentagon in supporting the war on terror and detention practices.
So investigating themselves?
Well, that's nice. I mean, we'll see what comes of that. I mean, there's so many issues here that I'd love to get to, but we're running out of time here very rapidly. One is, you know, the confirmation in popular culture through things like Zero Dark Thirty, the movie, that somehow we got Bin Laden because of torture, which is total fiction. But still lives in the public mind to some extent. I strongly encourage people to read Pay Any Price by James Reason. And I think we've got about 2 minutes left, so I'm going to give you each a minute to kind of give me your final word and thought on this. And Roy, you expressed some sorrow, I guess, at the profession, but I want to let you know, your profession is no more responsible for this than Jesus was for the Spanish Inquisition or Marx was for what happened with Lenin. So don't internalize the pressure too much.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll take my minute first. There are many wonderful psychologists in this country also, I will say, including many of them are members of the APA. But at higher levels, I'm very glad that this investigation is underway. And as much as I might wish that psychologists didn't have a key role to play, in fact, I think the reality is the torture program depended on psychologists. And in fact, if psychologists had not participated, that it's possible the torture program would have been discontinued or never started.
Trudy, 30 seconds, I'm afraid, for you.
Very quickly. My concern, my issue, the involvement in this, is that I began in 2006 and 2007 to hold psychologists that I knew were involved in the abuse and torture of detainees accountable. Complaints have been filed in many states. Court cases have been filed, not just Texas and Mitchell, in several states, and no psychologist has been held accountable for any of their actions.
Mm. Well, I
or anybody else.
I want
anybody else.
Trudy, if you send me emails about that stuff, I'll post updates on our website. I want to thank you both for joining us, but we are, I'm afraid, out of time. Roy Adelson and Trudy Bond, thanks so much for being on with us today.
Thank you.